Podtacular, episode 215, Decade of Games, for the week of February 15th, 2010.
Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Podtacular, episode 215. We got quite a crowd here today doing Decade of Games. And I have with me today Brent Gamer.
The Decade of Games!
Yay! Chucky J.
The Decade of Games.
And old time host JVB.
The Decade of Games.
Ace of Spades card.
Full bottle of dolls.
Nice.
Welcome, everyone.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Doing great. It's great to be back.
Oh, yeah. It's good to have you back.
It's been a while.
I missed you, JVB.
Here, hasn't it? I forgot when the last time we had you on was. Probably the end.
Yeah, it's been, I'm trying to remember, I believe, the last time I was on was solo. I wasn't on with Fumo Jive, but it's been a long time. Too long.
Wasn't the Cold War still going on?
Oh. Yes, and wooden panels were still in style.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
we actually recorded Podtacular as the Berlin Wall was going down.
Yes.
So you were having front lines news during that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Actually, we had to do the podcast in Morse code because technology was a little.
The Germans have caught on to us doing the podcast. We must distract them.
We made it back into West Germany. We're all right now.
Literally tails from the foxhole.
Oh, yeah.
And we will distract them. Yeah, Anus Armor was actually armor back then.
It was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It was a necessity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because when
that's
you were
a poor German impression.
You didn't want to get shot, right?
Some reason
they're running from our Wiener Schnitzel.
Well, now when I think of Germans, I think of the guy from Inglourious Bastards, and he loves his milk. I don't know if you guys seen that, but
I wanted to see it.
Delicious milk.
I just never got around to it.
I don't remember who was the guy that liked milk, though. That didn't really stand out to me.
Yeah, it was a very interesting movie.
It was. Anyway, so this show is featuring basically Podtacular's take on the last decade in gaming. We're kind of behind everyone else in this. But we had the month off where we didn't do much anything, so this is our opportunity to voice our opinions of what the past decade was like and the evolution of gaming. For some of you guys, that might be Halo starting off for some of y'all, or maybe you start on the Atari.
Atari?
Yeah.
What?
That thing.
Not at the beginning of this decade.
Well, no, but
maybe the company.
Start gaming.
Look, maybe y'all had money, but I only had.
Okay, I thought you said the decade.
Well, decade, no. We had Nintendo 64 and everything else like that. We were a little bit further along back then. But for some of y'all...
Yeah, the N64 started, would have died right at the beginning of the decade. I think Majora's Mask was released in mid-2000.
GameCube was where it was at, man.
Yeah, GameCube got released in 2001. That was pretty awesome. I remember
came out.
I got a GameCube on release day, and I stood in a line in Walmart at midnight, And you had two choices. You could have a purple GameCube or a jet black GameCube, and I got a jet black GameCube. And then you were given a choice between, I think the lineup, the launch games were Star Wars Rogue Squadron 2, Wave Race, Blue Storm, and Super Monkey Ball were the only games they had at the Walmart
there,
I went
there
to.
Was
and I got a
Mario game too.
Squadron. There, I think they had Luigi's Mansion out, but there wasn't an official Mario game out during the launch.
Yeah, Luigi's Mansion.
Luigi's Mansion was out, and it was all right, but it wasn't by any means a traditional
Mario
Mario
Squadron
game.
was the game to get.
Oh man,
yeah, it was. Oh, I remember just the graphical improvement over the N64. Mm-hmm. Just playing Rogue Squadron 2 was like, oh my god, this is the future of gaming.
Oh, like, this is better than the Xbox.
Actually, other than Need for Speed 3, Rogue Squadron was the first game I had on my computer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I remember seeing Asteroids in 79, so I go a little way back.
You're an old timer.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm only 37, which is the funny thing. Just an indication of how far things have come so quickly.
Yeah, I know.
Well, at least I think it's quickly. Trying to make myself feel young.
Yeah.
But yeah, the last decade was really impressive with games. And it's funny because in 10 years, gaming has leapfrogged.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
This technology and what we see is pretty insane.
Yeah, it's boom. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
It's become exponentially better.
Nice.
The thing that really stood out for me over the past decade was it kind of switched from back in, you know, the 90s, every system was trying to become a graphical improvement over the last one. So, I mean, the Super NES was like head over heels better than the NES. And then the N64, you know, took gaming into 3D. But the last decade, really, it wasn't about graphical improvement as much as it refined gameplay. Like, developers really started focusing on how they could improve gameplay instead of just, like, crazy graphical improvement. Like, we saw the induction of online console gaming.
Yeah, everything went online.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally saw the end of the cartridge era.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually kind of missed the cartridge. I missed blowing into my N64 cartridge. And,
oh, you still have
cartridges
for Nintendo portable stuff.
Kind of, it's an SD card.
The DS, yeah.
Yeah. I guess that kind of counts as a cartridge. But I mean, I like the old school, like, large cartridges that, like, you put. Like, it was almost like a harmonica.
Yeah, and
like,
then you have to pull it out.
Harmonica when it didn't work. You'd be like.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Everyone I still have my NES hooked up, and I have like 12 games for it.
I got my Super Nintendo still hooked up.
Oh, man.
Nice.
I wish I had a...
Jeez.
Back in the 90s, I didn't have an early Nintendo console. I didn't have a 16-bit Nintendo console, but I had a Genesis. So I played a lot of Sonic the Hedgehog, and I remember there was this one obscure game that I can't even find information about today, but it's called El Viente. And it was about like this, I don't even know, it was like in Mexico, but you play as like this lady that wears a cape and she goes around beating up motorcycles. Like, I don't even remember. Like, it wasn't even like people on motorcycles. You just beat up the motorcycle. It was crazy.
Okay.
Well, the decade started for me as kind of a nightmare in gaming.
And why was that?
With the news that Microsoft was buying Bungie.
Oh.
So that meant that Halo was not going to be coming to the PC and Mac.
Well, it was never coming to the Mac.
It was announced at Macworld.
Yeah, it was coming to Mac, and then it didn't come to Mac.
Yeah, it came to Mac.
Yeah,
I mean,
it came later eventually.
It came later, but it wasn't originally launched for the Mac.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It was the
look how good they're doing.
Microsoft bought Bungie so that they could bring Halo to the Xbox.
That was the smartest
and
move.
And I was freaked out.
I know.
That saved Xbox.
Oh, yeah.
Because, as we all know, if it wasn't for Halo, it wouldn't have had a strong launch.
Right? Yeah.
It made the console. Absolutely.
And Halo 2, of course.
In theory, it would have bombed worse than the Dreamcast, because with the Dreamcast, at least Sega had established franchises like Sonic and, I mean, even Phantasy Star when they went with PSO. But Xbox, Microsoft didn't have anything. I mean, it was coming out fresh. It had to establish something as its key franchise. And
Halo. Halo really did it, too.
Hey, oh, forget it. Back then, you had to buy the Xbox in a package deal back then.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was getting Halo. Like, my friends would call me, like, I'm going to get the Xbox. What games should I get? First game I said was Halo. And of course, some of the other games, some places you had to buy six. Well, get the six game deal, which was like $800 or something.
Oh, God.
That was pretty insane. Yeah.
Was that to make sure that it sold, or?
Yeah. Yeah, to make sure that the games, I guess, sold, more importantly, and to prevent, I guess, a shortage, I guess it was a way of saying, okay, if you really want this game, you're going to spend a lot of money to buy it, the system.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of weird.
Yeah, that's kind of reverse psychology, though. I mean, you kind of want it to be low price so that people try it out. Then I guess when the popularity increases, then jack up the price. But starting out that high kind of seems a little risky.
Yeah, but let me ask you this, though. Who bought it?
Everyone.
Everyone. Yeah.
It was the game to have.
Yeah. A lot of people bought it initially. And the friend who went ahead and spent the $800, He told me the next day he said that he didn't sleep because he kept playing Halo.
Oh yeah,
he didn't know anything about it, and that was the funny part. He didn't know anything about Halo, and I followed it on IGN and stuff like that, and I remember seeing their review of it, a video review.
I stayed up for a game like that once, and that was Halo 3. Me and my roommate stayed up and just played through almost the entire campaign overnight.
Wow. Damn. Funny, though, is that I didn't, and I believe I said this on Podtacular before, I didn't finish one until I finished two. So it took me almost 2 years to finish the original Halo.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some people that haven't finished two out there who have to, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of the series and the story in general, it's probably a good idea to just finish them all. It doesn't. You probably know like the history by listening to Podtacular or watching the videos, Halo Legends, but just the experience. You got to experience them all, and determine which one is the best one that you like. I'm assuming everybody likes Halo Combat Evolved better.
Halo 2? Between the Halo 2 and Halo Combat Evolved?
Or at all?
Yeah. Between all three. Yeah.
Oh, all three? Halo 1 was, innovative at the time. It saved the Xbox and all, but Halo 2 had the online play, and that's where it was at for me.
Yeah. And how many games of Halo 2 multiplayer did you play, Brent?
I played over 5,000 games, so... In contrast, okay. I've only played like 1,500 games of Halo 3. So
yeah, you played about the same amount, JVB. I looked it up.
Yeah, I played a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. I played 2,600.
Damn. Wow. Yeah, I played the other night. I played on Saturday. So I had a fun time playing it when I could find a game. I played with Kessel Man.
Oh, nice.
Wasn't Queso Man with us in there the other night with ODST, Brent?
He did the Endure and Deja Vu achievements with us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I ordered my copy of Halo 2, and it's still in the mail.
Yeah.
You got yours.
We're trying to honor the Halo 2 game before they cut off the lifeline in August. I mean, in April. Yeah, they take it off.
April 15th.
Oh, it's going to be a sad day. The end of an era.
They had some of the best maps.
Oh, man, I love those maps. Oh,
yeah, definitely.
Didn't you have a list of your favorite maps, Chucky?
Yeah, at the top is definitely Headlong.
Headlong. It's
perfect for the objective game types like CTF and Bomb, you know, but Slayer works perfectly on it, too.
Free-for-all Slayer, not Team Slayer, I think.
Yeah, I'd go
on BTB?
There.
I loved BTB Slayer on Headlong. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And it always felt like, or at least when I play on Halo 2 Vista, it seems like FFA Slayer kind of works better on Headlong. I mean, Big Team Slayer works, but I want to say FFA kind of feels a little more natural in that map.
There's always a dominant type. I mean, you could play just about any type on any map, but there's always going to be one that works the best on.
Mm-hmm. The best memories I have of Headlong are One Flag CTF.
Yes.
Oh.
Trying to get it across. Get it out of the building is a big step, but then trying to get it across the dirt with the turret there. And
oh, yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, though. My memories of Halo 2 Vista are a little jaded.
Oh, yeah.
Because I didn't get to play like matchmaking on Halo 2 Vista often.
Oh, okay. Because, what was that?
That's sad.
Well, it's because that's when Cyberline Films was starting up, and so we were doing all our hijinks in custom games.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, okay.
That was interesting, and the weird thing about Halo 2 Vista was it has all the custom maps, and granted, there wasn't a big draw to it because
no one knew how to do it.
Microsoft kind of messed Halo 2 Vista up pretty royally.
Well, that, and they were like, here, we're going to give you a map editor, and everyone was like, oh my god, a map editor? And then you open that sucker up, and it's like, what the is this?
What do we do?
What is this?
Yeah, it was supposed to be similar to the Halo Custom Edition.
It was like, why can't I just spawn a wall? Why do I have to draw it out?
It was supposed to kind of be similar to that of the Halo Custom Edition tools that were there. And they limited it a lot, which kind of sucked. And people still make custom maps for Halo Custom Edition.
Did you have to like draw geometry like AutoCAD?
Yes.
Like, oh my god.
It's crazy. It was insane.
OCAD, 3DS Max, whichever you can get your hands on.
Oh man.
I mean, because you would join a friend, you'd be like, oh, I'm going to join my friend's custom game. Maybe they're just doing some Team Slayer everything. You get on, and it's like this giant map where you jump and you rocket across the map. And everyone's nice. Got rocket launchers. You know, it was insane.
Yeah, well.
Halo 2 Vista basically started like, I hate to say it, but Forge is because of Halo 2 Vista. Halo 3 Forge mode is because of Halo 2 Vista.
Yeah, because of how bad the map editor was, you mean?
Well, because, I mean, they added a map editor, and they were like, this is going to be great. And then they realized, though, that if it wasn't a good user interface, people weren't going to do it. However, the people that did do it did make some, like, actual fun stuff. Like, people who made up, you know, like, what was it? Tower of Power. People who would make maps for that, you know, that got insanely popular. Big infection maps, you know, they realized that there was a market to be had in people making their own stuff instead of constantly playing the same maps and trying to come up with a new game type for it. You could build your map around your game type.
And now look at the MLG maps on Foundry. All the custom ones that they have there.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting.
I'm glad I was there.
Well, I remember mostly Halo 2, where you had all the glitches, where you could super bounce and and fly with your sword in midair, and so that was a lot of fun just trying to find those with some of the Podtacular community guys.
Right,
trying to get out of the awesome. Geometry on burial mounds.
Yeah.
Right.
You remember the glitch where if you like
can get up to the crane and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I remember. I've done that before.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It wasn't a bad thing, but it definitely, that was the start of like some real messed up glitching that would happen in matchmaking.
Mm.
You'd be like, where's this guy sniping me from? And you look up, and he's like at the very top of Metropolis.
Yeah, all the super bouncing.
That used to be a problem on Zanzibar, or what used to be it was Zanzibar. People would use I don't remember, but you know the flaps on the side of the defensive base?
Yeah.
The windows?
Yeah.
You could jump off of one of those windows and bounce up and get on top of the defensive base. So that basically you could just get up there and start sniping people.
And there was like an invisible wall where it couldn't hurt you.
Yeah.
Like people couldn't get up there and shoot at you.
I just remember custom games were a much bigger deal in Halo 2 than they are in Halo 3. And I think a lot of that was, I mean, I've driven this point into the ground at this point on the podcast, but it's Halo 2 was very much a product of its time, and the Xbox really didn't have too many online games.
Mm-hmm.
The original one, basically you could either play Halo 2 or I don't even remember. It was like Crimson Skies. If you're really bored. God.
And Mech Warrior. So,
yeah, Mech Warrior, but everybody played Halo 2. And eventually, you know, you get that many people just having playing one game, you're eventually going to get bored and start doing crazy stuff. So, I mean, I remember Tower of Power on Ascension. That was awesome. The original zombie game type.
When they made zombies, I mean, come on, that's got to prove dedication right there in Bungie's eyes. You know, users made up a game type called zombies, and what happens in Halo 3?
They created that for you. Yeah.
And it ran on honor rules, too, that most people would actually obey. When you got killed, you literally had to change your own team. You had to go into the menu and jump to the zombie team.
I know a couple times I forgot, and people yelled at me, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, and I switched. Yeah.
Except on Halo 3, it seems like the infection game type isn't as fun.
Yeah, it doesn't, because it's kind of like instantaneous. You know, you don't get to relish spawning as a human and then realizing, oh man, I just got killed, and switching to the zombie team. Like, the honor system sucked, but it gave you a chance to tell all your guys, up, I'm a zombie now.
I think it also has to do with like all the variations of zombies, like extra speed or shields and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it kind of kills. Plain and simple, and I think like some of the map layouts were kind of designed in Halo 2 to support that over Halo 3.
Any zombie game where zombies have shields can just go die, okay? They're like, it makes it balanced. They're zombies.
They're not supposed to be balanced.
They're supposed to be cannon fodder until they get to us and get a lucky kill.
That's right. They're supposed to you're supposed to run out of ammo.
Oh yeah, I remember people used to like stay in the same room so that if they died they could grab their ammo. Like surviving people.
Yep.
Yeah.
I hated people who would deliberately kill themselves just to get more ammo.
Because
if you killed yourself you didn't have to go zombie, and so they would just kill themselves, become a zombie, and then come back.
I think at some point we made a rule that if that, you know, anytime you die, then you have to switch.
You become a zombie, yeah.
Yeah, and that rule does work until you realize that then people will kill their friends.
Well, whenever I play on Halo 2 Vista, it's like if you accidentally get killed by one of your teammates, or if you get like caught in crossfire or something, you can stay human. But if it's a result that you should be zombie no matter what, or you're purposely trying to avoid zombie, then we try to make you switch.
You'd always have to be careful, though, and pick your maps, because everyone would be like, I want to play on this because it's my favorite zombie map. And so you'd be like, all right. And then you realize the only reason the only reason they want to play there is because they can get on top of like the map and stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I hate glitchers.
Yeah. There was that area on turf that you could get up on top of, too.
Yeah.
It was so annoying.
Turf was interesting when they came out with that, because it made me feel superior to all the Halo 2 on like Xbox people, because they were like, you're playing on PC? It was originally on console. And I was like, yeah, and I just got turf for free. What's wrong with you?
I gladly paid.
Yep, that was worth it. Worth every penny.
That's what she said.
Okay. Well, enough rambling on our end. So let's take a look at the beginning of the decade. We had the GameCube coming out. We had Xbox coming out just with Halo supporting it all the way. And then we had a few other games. And I don't know, that kind of also seemed like the spawn of the first-person shooter, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
To me, kind of the last decade was the decade of the first-person shooter.
That was kind of around the time when Medal of Honor was invented, wasn't it?
Probably.
There were definitely first-person shooters on the PC. Let's be clear about that. But I mean, the only console FPSs that had existed before were stuff on the N64 that came out of Rare, like Perfect Dark.
Yeah, Perfect Dark, GoldenEye.
GoldenEye. Yeah, stuff like that.
That was pretty much the beginning of it all on the console side.
Oh yeah, GoldenEye. That's where it started.
Yeah, staying up late.
Yeah, I forgot
talking
about
trash
that.
With your friends.
Golden gun.
And you know, it's funny. You think of how what we have nowadays and how spoiled people are. Back then, you had to play on split screen on like a 15-inch TV or something, and nobody complained.
Oh, I always loved split screen because if some guy was the jerk who was sitting in the corner that no one could get to with this, like the rocket launcher or something, you could literally reach over and go, "Stop that!"
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I beat you up, fool.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that.
Just smack him.
You know, kick him out of your house. They're like, "Get out of here, man!"
And there's something about yelling to someone's face and like over a headset.
Yeah, telling someone you just pwned them is so much more satisfying when they look you in the face and go, "Shut up."
Yeah, there was one story where I had a few of my friends over, and every Monday we would play GoldenEye until 9 o'clock, and then we would watch wrestling. And so we're playing GoldenEye, and most of them didn't know how to play. So I let them play amongst themselves, get used to the controls, get a feel for it. So my friend Orlando, he's camping like he's on this upper level just looking down. And I know where he was at because I played it so much. And so I look at him and I go, "Hey, Orlando." He goes, "What?" I go, "Why don't you turn your character around really quick?" And I melee him and killed him. No, actually, I headshot him playing with the golden gun. I was like, that felt good. So, you know, he was like, "God damn it."
Golden gun was pretty much, man, when they invented the golden gun, that just like opened up the doors for like God mode and stuff.
Yeah, I never got to play that.
Forget about it.
The first thing I grew up on was Need for Speed and Mario.
You kids with your fancy Team SWAT, play Golden Gun mode. That's Team SWAT right there.
Oh, yeah.
I can shoot you in the head with one shot with a BR. I can shoot you with a Golden Gun and you're dead for some reason.
Ah. I know, right? One little pistol.
I never understood how that worked. Like, you put this tiny golden bullet in and it kills him instantly, like...
That was James Bond. You know, you didn't have to know.
It's not a golden gun. It was apparently a lead gun.
Hey, silver bullets work on werewolves.
You don't get a bullet, you'll get them with the poison.
Golden guns work on Odd Job, apparently.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I hated Odd Job.
Yeah, if you're so the guy that played Odd Job. Because you played it on the
Jaws.
If you played as Odd Job, especially on the 64, I mean, you just were hated by all because, like, if you run a PC, you could look down easy, but with the 64, you know, you had to hold R, look down, couldn't just, like, shoot him on the run.
Yeah. That's one thing about, I mean, I've seen people play GoldenEye before, and I actually had played it. It's just really weird with the controls, and, like, you move your reticle around the screen, it's not centered, in the middle.
Yeah.
So I forgot about that. That was weird.
Yeah, that was weird for me because I started off with Halo, and then one of my friends had Golden Gun. We played that for a bit. It's like, oh, geez, I really don't know how to do this.
Yeah. That was just another example of the fact that it was like basically the first console FPS, and like they were trying to figure out how they could translate the first-person shooter over to the consoles. So they just had these wacky controls.
I mean, that got refined well too for the day and age.
Yeah.
Now here's something to think about though. We're all talking and singing the praises of GoldenEye. Can anyone name, especially like a 64 game that was just utter fail?
An N64 game that was utter fail?
Superman 64?
Yeah, there you go. Worst game of all time.
I've never played it, but I've heard all about it.
I've actually played it. It was awful.
It's terrible. It's not Superman at all.
Oh no, it's got Superman. It's just bad. It's unplayable. It's broken.
You're flying through rings the entire time, like dead serious.
I know, but even that's fine. Like I can understand. Like if I'm Superman and there are these rings in the air, I should probably fly through them. But I mean, you can't even win. Like that game is like so broken that it's. I'm not sure anybody's ever beaten it before,
Superman.
Or any large. People.
What's the objective?
Now, you have to fly through the rings in a certain time, but the time they give you is extremely short. Like if you mess up even like a little bit, you will lose that entire mission, and you have to start all over.
That's code for it. There is no objective. You just fly through rings.
That is so stupid.
All day.
Well, I mean, there's also areas where you have to pick up like a cop car and throw it at enemies.
And then you know what you do after that? Then you fly through rings again.
Exactly, but nobody knows what happens after that because nobody's ever gotten past that part.
Innovation, we have none.
Oh. Innovation, get some!
Now in cans.
I love how we're talking more about the 90s than we are the past decade. We're like reminiscing about the N64. And
yeah.
Remember the good old days when games were worth playing? Now you've got your PS2s with your Final Fantasy 600s.
Speaking of back in the day, I was talking to my professor lately, and he actually games a little bit, and he said for a while he held on to his Atari 2600 until like just a couple years ago when he gave it away to a charity or something.
Mm-hmm. I wish I still had mine.
Or a child's clinic. But it's like a professor having tech that old.
I still have a Super Nintendo. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know a few people that actually have their old Atari 2600s.
Yeah.
I think this past decade, though, was definitely the age of companies trying to get a new like mascot. You know, in the old days, it was like Nintendo and Sony and, you know, technically Sega. And it was Mario, Sonic, and then, I don't know, like Crash Bandicoot. Now, think of all the, like, franchises that are out now.
Yeah.
Each system. I mean, like, the PlayStation's got Final Fantasy, Jak and Daxter, Devil May Cry, you know.
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, just so many franchises now. I miss the old days of just, you know, when something came out, it was either Mario or not Mario.
Well, that was kind of the paradigm shift from the 90s into the 2000s was the fact that back then the company's main, I guess their main franchises were based around the kind of cutesy mascots, like Crash Bandicoot. I mean, it's like anthropomorphic animals and just like crazy cartoons, like... You think of Nintendo, it's Mario back in the 90s. You think of Sega in the 90s, it's Sonic the Hedgehog. You think of Sony in the 90s, it's you know Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you go into the 2000s and you look now and, like, with Microsoft, it's Halo. And with Sony, I mean, most people, when they think of the PlayStation nowadays, the main franchise they think of is, like, Metal Gear Solid.
Mm-hmm.
Or Final
with
Fantasy.
With Sony though, what isn't it? Like, I hate to rag on Sony, but Nintendo's got like Mario, and that's it. you know, Microsoft,
Mario and Zelda.
Yeah, Xbox, Microsoft, they've got Master Chief, and that's pretty much it. Sony has, like, tried to throw out every franchise known to mankind.
I think Sony really messed up when they let Microsoft get their hands on Final Fantasy. Because I think that that is a franchise that was really related to Sony in the mid-90s through most of the 2000s. And I think that now that the Western market can experience Final Fantasy on the 360, they're not going to relate it to Sony anymore. Like,
this is true.
You also have to remember that things are different in Japan. In Japan, the PS3 is crazy popular.
Yeah.
And the Xbox 360 is basically, it's non-existent. Like, people do not own 360s in Japan.
You know the story about why Xbox is not that popular in Japan, right?
It's because we don't have any established franchises. Like, you look at Sony, and they have all these crazy franchises that the Japanese love. They have the Metal Gear Solid. They have all of these Japanese-developed games that have been around for decades, and the Japanese cling to the games that are already established. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's just the way that market works.
My theory is that it goes back to the original Xbox. You know, the original Xbox came out, the big black-green, you know, Xbox.
Yeah.
And the last big black and green thing that came to Tokyo scared the crap out of them and took out Tokyo and everything. I think it was named Godzilla.
Oh, yeah. Godzilla was making a nuke reference. I was like, what?
Well, the story I always heard was that it was too big, and they have, you know, rather small living spaces generally.
Well,
so
totally stupid, though.
That argument's automatically thrown out the window with the fact that the PS3 sold like gangbusters day one, and the original PS3 model was like a George Foreman grill. That is the model. That is the form factor of the PS3.
The original, not the little George Foreman, the big George Foreman,
the huge George Foreman grill, not George Foreman Slim. Right.
The George Foreman. The George Foreman size George Foreman.
Right.
It just harkens back to the fact that Microsoft focuses on games that appeal to a very Western audience. Japan doesn't care about first-person shooters. They don't care about Western RPGs. They don't care about third-person action games. I mean, like, the third-person shooters, like Gears of War and...
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of another one.
No, they focus on The World Ends With You. Cough, cough, cough.
Yeah, that is actually what they focus on. They enjoy Japanese RPGs. They enjoy Japanese RPGs. They enjoy third-person action games like Devil May Cry and Bayonetta.
Bayonetta is just weird on all levels. I'm sorry.
But welcome to Japanese game development. I mean, that's how they
do it. We've got this chick who makes her costume out of her hair. Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How would you? No explanation.
I found that a little odd.
You want explanation? Go to America.
Yes, they have backstories. We do not.
I wonder how America would take Left 4 Dead 2 or something like that. Like, if they took it and then sent it to Japan, would Japan just get freaked
Japan
out?
Japan has Left 4 Dead 2.
But, I mean, do they like it? You know, or do they
don't. I told you, they don't like first-person shooters. Japan, in general, hates first-person shooters.
We should give them an RPG with zombies. Wild zombie appears. It uses bite. You're dead.
Now, I'm not trying to stereotype. There are gamers in Japan that will play first-person shooters, but a lot of them report that they get motion sickness playing them.
Really?
Like, a lot of Japanese refuse to play first-person shooters because they say they get motion sick from it.
Mm. Mighty Japanese baby gets motion sickness. Okay.
It's probably just two completely different cultures, then. That's probably just the whole...
It is. It's just the culture difference.
Yeah.
The Land of the Rising Sun and the Setting franchise.
So, did you guys play Diablo 2 or Warcraft 3 on your PCs?
Man. I played some Diablo. Good times.
I just played that so much. I would go online and meet up with people and, you know, beat the bosses a few times so you could get the equipment and try and make a set and all that crazy stuff.
Yeah.
It was Baby's first. It was Baby's first World of Warcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad the story had an end, or else I'd probably still be playing it.
What, Diablo 2?
Yeah.
You excited about Diablo 3?
Yes, you sir. Know,
whenever it decides to show its face.
Well, it'll show its face when it's ready.
When it's ready.
They still haven't even announced a launch date for StarCraft 2, and that's closer than Diablo 3.
I actually had someone ask me on a chat room one time. Someone mentioned or StarCraft 2, and someone was like, does anyone have a torrent for that? And I was like, dude, really?
Somebody is not paying attention.
I wonder what else he's not paying attention to. Maybe the cops outside his door.
Yeah.
Hi, we're here to beat you up. What for? Torrenting.
What's that?
Stealing, fool, smack.
But yeah, I didn't have the games back then, so you guys probably can talk more than I could about a lot of this stuff.
Well, those are the only two real PC games that I had was Diablo 2 and Warcraft 3.
Yeah. Like my first console ever was the 360 with Halo 3.
I'm trying to think, what was my first PC game? I want to say it was I was a shooter growing up, so I want to say it was like Allied Assault or SWAT 4.
Wow.
I really didn't get into PC gaming until about the, I guess, late 2006 when I started playing World of Warcraft.
Uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Uh-oh.
Hey, I play it too. Don't
I know,
hate.
It's not a bad game. It's just bad for those who are really addicted to it.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying I would lose my job if I started playing it.
The thing I've noticed is, like, most of the time I'll play it. When an expansion comes out, I'll just play it nonstop. I have that kind of addiction syndrome going on. But then I'll burn out on it after about 3 months. And at that point, it becomes kind of moderated.
Like people say you can get like extremely addicted from it. I play it for like 4 hours, and I'm already bored of every like 3-year-old in there who's like, need tank, need this. Hey, do you guys want to run that? I'll trade you this for that. It's just like, I'm done with you.
No, that's why you gotta find a good guild.
Well, I mean,
the general populace on World of Warcraft is not very good, but there are good guilds out there. There are guilds with mature, you know, older people that know how to play the game, and they're actually interesting to talk to.
Like the Knights of Good.
Did you just say mature and game in the same statement?
I mean, no, I'm not kidding. There are communities out there that have mature gamers.
Imagine that.
Imagine that.
That's crazy.
Somebody tell our parents.
Somebody, yes. That we're not all just trying to...
We're not a helpless cause.
We're not all trying to end our lives and the lives of everyone else because of violent video games.
Right.
Yeah, that whole thing with the media, too, is really just hogwash.
And that kind of got out of control in the
2000s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
With I remember when Columbine happened, and they were like, "Oh, it's Grand Theft Auto's fault." No, it's not. Yeah.
It's more of a parental and societal issue than it is gaming.
It's your stupid fault for not watching what your kids play. I understand that. I agree to a degree that kids shouldn't play anything, but to say though that it's, you know, Grand Theft Auto and Saints Row and stuff like that. Oh, it's teaching our kids bad morals. If your kid is that impressionable that a video game is running his life, where are you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's definitely the answer.
I think it's kind of a cause and effect thing. I think that a lot of the times they correlate. Like, I mean, there are indeed idiots out there that like think that they're gangsters and they want to go out and they want to, you know, commit drive-by shootings and they're beat up El Caminos, and they probably do play Grand Theft Auto. But I mean, that's not the Grand Theft Auto did not cause that. They play Grand Theft Auto because they're crazy. They did not become crazy because they played Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
At that point, it just becomes a causation paradox, and it's crazy. I think at this point, it's getting better. I think that the media, a lot of people don't put much clout into what the media says about video games anymore, because it's getting to the point where more and more people do play video games. Older people that grew up with stuff like the N64 are coming into adulthood, and they're having children of their own.
And they appearing understand. In media companies.
I think it really hit me that we're changing as a culture when it comes to understanding video games. When I was at Walmart the other day, and I was looking around at the video games that were on sale to see if there was anything good to pick up. And there was a family that was looking up and down the, I think it was PS3 aisle. And the dad looked down to his son, and he was standing next to his wife, and he said, "All right, you can get anything that says E for everyone. Or you can pick anything that says E for everyone." And at that point, like, it hit me that people are starting to understand that the ESRB ratings are there for a reason. You know, I mean, like...
Well, okay. And I've also heard stories where, like, actual places that sell games, like GameStop, are actually starting to enforce that.
Well, they always enforce it.
No, they don't. I've been to a few GameStops where 12-year-old kids will walk out with an immature game.
Yeah, but that's not policy. It has always been policy at GameStop to not sell M-rated games to people under the age of, what is it, 17? Is it 16 or 17? I don't remember.
17, I think.
Now, there have been cases where I did this. Back the original Red vs. Blue DVDs were actually rated like NC-17, so I couldn't pick them up. But I went to GameStop, and he said, "Kid, if you don't tell your parents I sold you this, I will totally sell it to you." I'm like, "All right, dude." And I was like 15 at the time. I bought it there. But, I mean, that stuff doesn't happen all the time.
It's just really weird kind of what kind of mindset that we've established on gaming. And I think, I don't know if it's just because the older population is just like didn't grow up with it as much, and now kids are really getting into it, or is it just another point for me to really rap on and hit hard, or maybe a combination of both?
I think the reason it came to a head in this generation was because video games had finally advanced to the point where we had gotten into pseudo-realistic graphics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3D graphics, enhanced 3D graphics over those that were found on the N64, and stuff like Grand Theft Auto, where you're running around and shooting people in the face. That was a very graphic, you know,
the
depiction.
The top-down Grand Theft Auto was not as big of a deal. Even if you're driving a tank through the streets and blowing up cop cars, like, it just didn't, it wasn't quite the same as being in first person or third person and, you know, shooting a pedestrian.
Yeah, back in the early 90s, I mean, the worst depiction of violence they had was like red Jell-O flying out of people's necks when they were playing Mortal Kombat.
Jell-O. And then games have just evolved so much from then, so trying to keep up with the evolution of games is another interesting thing.
Well, it's like the difference
the
between
the whole realism of what it is and all that stuff.
It's like the difference between me, you know, drawing on a piece of paper some guy getting shot in the head and blood coming out the back of his head, as opposed to, you know, the visual depiction of the Normandy invasion and Saving Private Ryan.
Right, and then
like, which one are people going to get more concerned about?
Right.
You know?
Well, then it's the whole with people actually doing it on the video game, actually committing the so-called murder of a person with no emotional attachment to it.
That's definitely something I'm not in favor of, but even that gets blown out of proportion. There was the No Russian scene in Modern Warfare 2,
right,
which technically was in the decade that we're talking about, kind of brought it all to a head. And the thing that bugs me is the scene wasn't really necessary. You know, you could do a cut scene that explains it. I don't know. I chose not to shoot anybody, so it made sense that the guy caught me and figured out that I was, you know, bogus.
But if you'll notice, even the No Russian scene didn't meet, you know, as much crazy opposition as stuff like the Hot Coffee mod from San Andreas did back in, I guess it would be 2005 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, the no Russian scene thing was kind of a passing issue. Nobody really cared about it. There weren't, you know, opposition groups asking that Modern Warfare get thrown off of the shelves because of no Russian. Like back when the
I think Rockstar wants opposition groups.
Yeah, Rockstar loves that kind of stuff. That's great for business. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna sell a game that almost it's marketed by shock value, then you want that kind of opposition.
Right.
No, it's just something that interesting to consider.
Yeah.
And I mean, the media really didn't. I don't know. This might just be me not paying much attention to the media or not being around back then when all the other games were around. But it seems like it's been more recently, like maybe within the past 5-7 years, where the media has actually started to really gripe on kids gaming.
Hmm.
Or is that just me?
I think that you'll find that recently it's become a lot better than it used to be. You look at the early 2000s and the amount of media attention that, you know, visually offensive games got as opposed to nowadays, it's a lot better.
Yeah.
And again, that just harkens back to, you know, people that grew up with video games are now becoming parents and they know what's up. And it's going to get even better as time goes on.
Well, let's move on to something else. Chuck, you have a few more things written down here that
What do you guys think about DLC? Because that kind of the later part of this decade, that became a real big thing with, you know, the Halo 2 maps. And, you know, I think PC games had it kind of for a while, but
back then it seemed PCs more had kind of like a customization thing where people had their mods and kind of spread the mods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right before the decade, I had Marathon. I guess it was Marathon Infinity by Bungie. And people would make entire new campaigns in the map editor. And you could download them and install them. And I played, what was it, Marathon Red, I think, which was a horror adaptation. So you'd be creeping around in the dark, and these monsters would jump out at you and stuff. And it was the same gameplay as Marathon, but with a totally different script and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool. But then you got DLC on the consoles, right?
Right.
Started with Halo 2, though, didn't it?
Well, that's when everybody wanted it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wanted new maps.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there wasn't any other game at the time that really had any other additional content for consoles. Was there?
I don't know. Do you remember, Brent?
There might have been something on PS2, but it would have been obscure.
Because they didn't have a hard drive, right? So you would have had to download it to the memory card.
Yeah, you would have had to download it to the memory card. But I think Halo 2 would have been the first example of a popular DLC pack being released. Something that was actually purchased in mass by the public.
Mm-hmm.
DLC's an all right idea. I don't have a problem with it really, but I don't like the idea of a developer kind of slacking off because he knows that, you know, later on he can just release something as DLC as opposed to trying to incorporate it in the final game, in the final retail version. And I mean, I don't think that's a rampant kind of concept, but.
And it's kind of hard to tell when it does go on. I seem to remember Bungie telling a story about one of the more recent Halo 3 maps that they had actually been working on it since. One of the earlier maps that they actually started on, and then they gave up on it and revisited it when it was time to make DLC.
Oh, really?
Like, is that the same thing as cutting something?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
If they knew that they couldn't release it as DLC, would they have tried to work it in? Would they try to have, you know, fixed whatever problems were with it? That's the issue I have.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't like small DLC. If I'm going to get DLC, I want it to be like the old school, like, expansion packs that would come out for Baldur's Gate or something on the PC. You know, these huge, massive expansions to games. Right. As opposed to these little tiny, like, Mass Effect missions, like Bring Down the Sky for the original Mass Effect, or Pinnacle Station. They just seem so small. I just prefer something like a larger release.
Yeah. The same thing with Fallout 3. I liked the DLCs, but once you're done, you're done. And some of them you get a great weapon out of it, and some of them you don't.
Yeah.
If I had bought them all for $10 a piece, I'd probably be upset. But since I got the Game of the Year edition and it was cheaper, you know,
yeah,
per thing, then I didn't feel quite as bad about it.
Hmm. Interesting.
It does seem like there are some people, some developers who they come out with DLC like right away. And
see, those kind of seems like, why didn't you just put it in the regular game?
Right.
They were working on it too late in the development process. They couldn't get it out in time.
Or we had a team that was finished with their part, so we set them up on DLC.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
But if you're going to release DLC on the same day the game comes out, postpone the game 2 weeks and put the DLC on there.
Right.
I mean,
we did well, you get free DLC day of launch. What? Well, I don't know. I
mean, well, now it's being used as a tool to kind of quell used game sales. What a developer will do, they'll make DLC for a game, and they'll include like a code to download the DLC and new retail copies of the game, so that if you buy the game used, you can't get that DLC. So, I mean, it's like in Mass Effect 2, if you buy the game new, you get a card that allows you access to what they're calling the Cerberus Network. And basically, the Cerberus Network has exclusive DLC that you can only get if you bought a copy of the game new.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
Very, very tricky.
Can I talk about the Dreamcast for a minute?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I have no experience, so the Dreamcast, clue me in.
All right.
I definitely have no experience.
For the kind of uninitiated, the Dreamcast was released back in, I think it was early 2000. No, it was 9/9 of 1999. That was the famous release date. So it was around during the start of the decade, and basically it was the first. I don't know what we're calling that generation. The generation that included the PS2 and the GameCube and the original Xbox. It was actually the first console in that generation of consoles. And so Sega came out early with that in 1999. And this was still when Sega was a console developer. Not a developer of console games. They actually made their own consoles. Like they originally had the Sega Master System, and then they came out with the Sega Genesis. And then they came out with the Sega CD that you could attach to your Sega Genesis. But I mean, it was still a viable company in the fight. Like the main two competitors in the video game industry during the 90s, or the early 90s rather, was Nintendo and Sega. I mean, there was always the big ad campaign from Sega that was something to the effect of "Sega does what Nintendo don't." I think that was it.
Yeah, but, I remember that.
I see.
Anyway, the Dreamcast was supposed to be like their greatest system of all time, and this was still back when Sega made good games. I don't remember the name of the guy, but there was the president of Sega at the time, literally took money out of his own pocket to fund these games, to fund the Dreamcast. And they just made these like incredible games like Phantasy Star Online, and even Sonic Adventure 1 was a pretty good game. Choo Choo Rocket, Crazy Taxi, Jet Grind Radio, just these crazy like fun Japanese games that were they were gamers' games. Like the Dreamcast never tried to market to the casual, you know, the kind of soccer mom crowd, but I don't know. What happened with the Dreamcast was it was popular for a while, but then the PS2 came out, and Sega was already in this like bad financial state. So when the PS2 came out and stole all of Dreamcast sales away, the Dreamcast was discontinued in 2001. So just kind of sad to see a console like that kind of fall. And Sega hasn't made its own console since then, really, so. Poor Dreamcast.
I remember it being discontinued, and back then I didn't realize why it was being discontinued. It just seems so sad, you know. I heard about these great games, but it seemed like it was just getting its legs, and then their legs were cut out from under them.
Yeah. I don't think the Dreamcast could find its audience. I think that the games that came out for the Dreamcast were like almost too obscure, to the point where only a hardcore gamer could really have fun with them. Like stuff like Power Stone and even the original Soul Calibur. It was something else before Soul Calibur, but I don't remember what the name is. But the original Soul Calibur came out on Dreamcast, and it just didn't work. The most important thing about the Dreamcast was it was the first major console to have its own built-in modem, so that you could connect online. So it was kind of the first time that a console gamer could play his games online, or her games.
Now, so, which games could do it?
Oh, man.
Obviously,
Star Online, which is kind of the big one. I think you could go online with Choo Choo Rocket. The EA 2K, or not 2K, somebody, I think that they created the 2K Sports franchise specifically for Dreamcast, and then just continued it after the Dreamcast left. But I'm pretty sure the 2K series, you could play some games online through that. Trying to remember. It wasn't utilized very much, but it was the first time that you could actually, you know, go online with it. And Phantasy Star Online was kind of a big leap in that direction, so.
I'm sorry I missed out.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I wasn't old enough back then. I guess I could have been. I just wasn't into the whole gaming thing yet.
Right.
So would we say that then the PS2 came out and kind of changed a lot of things? Or should we say that the PlayStation really started it? I don't know. What was the big deal about the PlayStation 2?
It was the evolution from... I think that the PS2 kind of symbolized the new way of creating games. There was a very simplistic way of creating games back in the 32-bit era with the Nintendo 64 and the PS1.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were mostly just focused on trying to figure out tips or just tricks to make you think you were playing a visually, you know, beautiful game, even though you weren't. The PS2 was when game developers stopped caring about graphics as much as caring about gameplay. So you started getting stuff like Shadow of the Colossus and the Persona games and... just trying to think of some others. The Metal Gear Solid series, even though that originated on the PS1, it really, you know, came into its own on the PS2.
Right. The first time I played a Metal Gear game was on the PS2, a friend's PS2.
Yeah. And
it was amazing.
Yeah.
I hadn't played that at all.
The Metal Gear?
Yeah.
Well, find a way to do so.
I've pretty much been stuck with Xbox and PC and what little Need for Speed I played on the PS2.
Yeah. For those that are interested in playing Phantasy Star Online, you can still do so. If you happen to have a copy of PSO for the PC, wink wink, you can connect to servers that are still around, even though the official servers are gone. Wink, wink. So, there is still a way to play PSO if you really, really want to.
So it came out for the PC as well? Or this is a cloned copy of it?
It it came out for the PC after the Dreamcast version came out.
Okay.
I think it came out about a year afterwards. Yeah. If I remember right, I think they might have been cross-platform, PC to Dreamcast.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I know that the sequel to Phantasy Star Online, which kind of sucked, is called Phantasy Star Universe. And, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't as good as PSO. That was a cross-platform between Xbox 360. Or not Xbox, cross-platform between PS2 and PS2. No, PS2 and PC. There were three versions of Phantasy Star Universe. There was PS2, PC, and then Xbox 360. And because the Xbox 360 version works off the Xbox Live framework, it can't connect cross-platform to the PC and PS2 versions. Mm-hmm. But the PS2 and PC versions are cross-platform.
See, I still don't know why cross-platform doesn't work with the Xbox Live service, because the Xbox Live service is integrated with Windows. You can integrate it with Windows, with Games for Windows Live. It's the same service.
But the developers have to choose to use Games for Windows Live, which is probably an additional licensing fee that they may or may not want to do, or they might want to keep control of X, Y, and Z factors, and if they do that, then they would lose, you know, some sort of control. I'm not excusing it, because I think you're right. It seems like it would be very possible, but I can see why people would want to avoid that.
It's just puzzling to me.
It seems like there would be more games coming out for Xbox Live Arcade, but I believe Microsoft takes a pretty hefty portion of the sales. Like,
probably, yeah.
For the iPhone, Apple keeps 30%. I believe Microsoft keeps like 70% or something like that, which is insane. And the smaller developers just can't afford to do that. They've, you know, got to feed their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on.
All right.
Chucky, was there anything else you wanted to talk about from your list?
Un minuto. Let's see.
That was a game. It was released for PS2. Un memento.
Yes. It was a strategy game based in Colombia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the sequel to El Viento from Sega Genesis.
Yep. I think Bejeweled and PopCap was a big story. You know, they're taking a casual game and making it have a hardcore feeling to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know, have you guys played Petgoal or Plants vs. Zombies?
Oh yeah, I've played plenty of Peggle.
I've seen Plants vs. Zombies. I haven't played any other ones.
I mean, they're very cartoony and, you know, family friendly and soccer mom friendly, but once you get into it, it's there's some soccer moms that would sit in front of Peggle and, you know, they'd be at it for hours because they want to beat, you know, X level that's pretty tough or beat such and such challenge. And Bejeweled kind of started that in either late 99 or 2000.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm fine with soccer moms playing games. I don't want it to sacrifice, you know, game depth for it.
Mm.
And games like Bejeweled and Peggle really don't sacrifice that. I would suffice to say that Peggle is not the deepest game available, in that you drop a ball and you watch it hit pegs until it hits the bottom. But, I mean, it's addictive because I just love watching those little pegs light up every time the ball hits them. So.
Well, they added some measure of skill to it. So, well, I don't know if it's added, but certainly when you get towards the end of those levels, you start running out of balls and the pegs that you have left might be on completely opposite ends of the screen, and you got to figure out, you know, how you're going to bounce it over there. And
yeah,
it's craziness.
You can guess it up to about like four bounces if you're really good, I guess.
Like, I don't know if I'm that good.
Or if you're a robot, you can actually draw out the lines in your head.
Right.
No, that was one of the characters is what's his name? Zen something, like Professor Zen.
The horse or the horse?
The last
thing,
guy,
unicorn?
the owl guy. And if you pick him, you pick your best shot, and then he perfects it within a few degrees.
Well, that's so cool.
He does all the calculations and picks whatever the best shot is, points wise, right around where you picked.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting. Although I'm still kind of stuck with my FPS world. Haven't really expanded out anywhere yet.
Yep.
Except for some of the instrument games. That's another thing that's come out this decade was the instrument.
Music games.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Surprised we didn't think about that one. But yeah, Guitar Hero, Rock Band, and now we have DJ Hero.
Mm-hmm. DJ,
which I haven't heard too many good things about, but...
Well, I just know the music and it's awesome. I don't know about the gameplay, but I could listen to those mixes that they've made, you know, over and over. Yeah, I mean, I don't have any of those, but I've played a few of them at different people's houses and, you know, events and stuff. Tons of fun.
Well, I have Rock Band 2 and Guitar Hero 3 and 5 and World Tour.
Whoa.
Very so, nice. Last school year I played them a lot. This year I've kind of backed off and focused more on a little bit of Halo, but I still play them from time to time. I still got to beat Fallout 3.
Oh, Dustin, come on, man.
I played some of them last weekend. And the weekend before that, which was Lambrew.
Yeah, I can't talk. I bought it at the end of last year and, you know, finished it last week or the week before. Good stuff. Good stuff. I think I would regret the DLC if I paid $10 each, but just the game overall was really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still haven't finished my first run through. I'm only at level 13.
Do you have the DLC?
No.
Oh. Because you're gonna hit a brick wall at 20.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I still have to do two more run throughs to get the achievements for getting to levels with
no, you don't.
Neutral and bad.
No, you don't.
What, to get the achievements?
Yeah. I'm going to give up the secret right here. Are you ready? Okay. So what you do, right before you're going to level up to the one of those key levels, you save your game.
Uh-huh.
Right? Then you go do something simple, like go kill a few guys or finish one quest that's really easy to finish or take some scrap metal to the dude at Megaton or whatever. And you level up and you get your I'm good achievement, right?
Okay.
Then you go to, what's her name, Moira, right?
Uh-huh.
Go into Moira's business there, and even though there's a bodyguard standing there, you can go to her computer and start to hack it. You don't actually hack it, but you just hit A so that you start to hack it, and then you back out. So you do A, B, A, B, A, B, A, B, over and over and over again, and you keep getting negative karma, and you bring your karma down, and it takes a long time, but you get down to neutral. Then you go do that quest again or whatever, level up, and you got your neutral achievement.
Huh.
Well, actually, before you go do that quest, you want to save it again so that you have your neutral starting point so you don't have to go all the way from good to evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that then you go do your quest, come back, do the same thing until your thing says that you're evil, and then you go do that.
Huh.
Yep.
Interesting. Okay.
So
well,
I didn't have to do anything like blow up Megaton or, I mean, unless you really want to try out the evil stuff, which you may, then that's your answer.
Yeah.
Well, I'm already at level 13, so I'd have to go back and do it for level 7.
Yes.
Again. Other than that, I'll keep that in mind.
I mean, the real nice thing about the DLC, well, the Broken Steel is the good DLC because it continues the game. If you finish the game, you can still walk around and do quests and stuff, and you get to go up to level 30. And at level 30, there's some pretty nice perks. So.
Okay.
If you're going to get one, get Broken Steel.
Okay. Keep that in mind.
Yay. DLC Yay. For the win.
Back on to DLC topic.
Well, that's... I played Burnout Paradise in
08. That's a good game.
Yes. And so they released a lot of free DLC, which means no achievements, unfortunately. Unless you're Bungie. They released motorcycles. They released the day-night cycle. What else? They released a few other things for free. And then they did the Cops and Robbers mini game for $10, and the island was $10, which was really worth it. It might have been 12. I think it was more than 10. The party mode was not that great because you got to have people who are going to come over to your house because it's a local party mode.
Yeah.
Yep. But they said from the beginning that this was going to be a game that they continued to work on for, 2 years and continue to release stuff over time. And they did.
Yeah. Now they just announced, Fallout Vegas.
Well, that's a different company.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, this was Criterion, which is in England. They're working on something because they've stopped working on Burnout Paradise, but I don't know what it is, if it's a new Burnout or something completely different.
War. War never changes. That's an awesome quote, just how he said.
Ron Perlman's voiceover never changes.
Mm-hmm. But it's epic wherever it is.
Yes. War never changes. Ah, good times. Okay. Brent, you wrote a nice long summary of your, I guess, top five games that you liked, or five significant games, or at least five. You want to talk about that a little bit?
I like how you called out Destructoid with the with one of their lack of picks.
Oh yeah. So this I was trying to,
especially for us, right?
I was trying to remember what games came out this decade, and like I was trying to find a list, and the best list I could find that would feature all the games that would starting at 2000 going up through 2010 was Destructoid's top 50 games of the decade feature. So I read through that, and it was a pretty good article, and I linked to it in my own article that I wrote, the retrospective, A Decade of Games. But basically, my retrospective, I go through five games that influenced me over the past decade, and the way that I play games, the way I think about games, and those games are Phantasy Star Online, Super Smash Bros. Melee, Halo 2, Persona 4, and Shadow of the Colossus. But the thing that Chucky was referencing earlier was on the top 50 games of the decade list, Halo is missing from the entire list. And instead, they added things like WarioWare Twisted and Lost Odyssey. And I mean, which
so
is...
You're telling me that Halo 1, Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 3 ODST, and Halo Wars are all missing from this countdown.
There's not a single Halo game in the top 50 games of the decade from Destructoid.
That's depressing.
It's more depressing. If there weren't games like WarioWare Twisted and Lost Odyssey on the list, it might have been different. If they had chosen something that was legitimately maybe better than Halo 2 or Halo, maybe. But I mean, the thought that WarioWare Twisted is more influential or better than Halo, it's crazy. And, I mean, in my article, I quote Metacritic, and, I mean, Metacritic scores or whatever, but, I mean, Halo 1 has an average review score of 97, and it has 68 professional reviews that go into that score. And if you have a 97 average out of 68 scores, you probably did something right.
Yeah.
I mean, Halo was a fantastic game, and it deserves to be on the list, and I don't understand why it's not.
And the screenshot you picked for your article just brings back so many memories. It's kind of
relic.
Yeah, I used a. Yeah, there's been plenty of times when I'd run the Warthog up through that base on top of Relic and pick up the flag carrier. We'd drive off.
Go, go, go! Bring out
some memories.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So what else do you have on here?
We've also got Persona 4. I want to talk about that because the way I experienced Persona 4 was very interesting.
I have never heard of this game.
Okay.
Was there Persona 1?
Yes, there's a Persona 1, a Persona 2, and I think Persona 2 was actually two different games. Okay. Persona 3 came out for PS2, and Persona 4 came out for PS2. And basically, the games are all... It's a spin-off series from a larger series that was started in the late 80s called Shin Megami Tensei. And in the Shin Megami Tensei games, it's basically about demons that fight each other. So think of like Pokemon, except the Pokemons are spawned from hell.
And they were.
Yeah. So Persona is a spin-off series of that, and Persona focuses around Japanese high school students that discover they have the ability to summon these demons, and they use these demons to go fight in interdimensional battles to defend their, you know, reality. So each game, the dimension is different. Like, the place in which they fight and how they summon the demons changes from game to game. And there was a bit of a controversy because in Persona 3, the way that the high school students would summon demons is they would take guns, like crazy magic guns, and they would stick them to their head and they would pull the trigger like they were committing suicide. But instead of dying, the gun blast would summon a demon. Which is, you know, kind of weird or whatever. But in Persona 4, it focuses around this protagonist that he moves from a large city in Japan, and it's, I guess, I don't think they ever state it specifically, but I'm pretty sure it's Tokyo. He moves from the large city into a smaller Japanese rural town, kind of in the foothills, called Inaba. And he moves in with his uncle and his younger cousin. And his uncle is a private, not private detective. He's a detective at the Inaba Police Department. And he's got a, you know, younger girl cousin that he kind of looks at as his little sister. And it kind of chronicles his adventures in Inaba. And he enrolls in the Inaba High School, where he meets all of his friends that later become his party mates as he battles the interdimensional demons. And the kids end up learning that if they wear special sunglasses, they can jump inside TVs where they can fight demons.
Nice.
So they jump inside these TVs, and each channel represents something that they fear the most. So whenever the party goes to get a new party member, they have to fight the thing that they fear the most. Like one of the guys is, this is kind of weird, but he falls in love with somebody that he thinks is a dude, but it's actually a chick that's dressed up like a dude. So he starts to become afraid that he's gay. So you have to fight his like demon incarnation of a gay guy in like, it's wearing underwear. Literally all he's wearing is like sumo underwear. So you have to fight like a large version of him in sumo underwear. In the demon, and then he finally beats that, and he gains his persona, which is his demon form or whatever. So you also have to go through that with, like, one of the girls is really self-conscious and doesn't think that anybody trusts her and that nobody likes her, and it's just crazy like that. But the reason that Persona 4 really stands out to me is it's a 100-plus-hour game. I'm going to come out and say that. It is a extremely long game. And there are a lot of lines of script in the game, and but they really did a really good localization from Japanese into English. Every line of spoken dialogue in the game has a voiceover.
Really?
And the voiceover is really, really good. The voiceover work is really, really good. You really get invested in these characters. You start to care about these characters. But I never actually played Persona 4. Instead, there's this website called GiantBomb.com, if you've never been to it. It features former editors from GameSpot.com that left after a big controversy that happened there that I don't remember exactly what happened, but so it's got Vinny Caravella, Jeff Gerstmann, Ryan Davis, and Brad Shoemaker are the main Giant Bomb guys. Well, anyway, Giant Bomb is known for creating these really cool kind of features on their site. They don't go about doing gaming news that a regular blog does where they just, you know, type out the news in an article and then you read it. Basically, what they'll do is they'll post videos of games that they're actually playing at the time. They'll do quick looks of, like, White Knight Chronicles or whatever that's coming out new. And they'll actually have videos of them commenting on what they think of the game as they play it. But with Persona 4, the game is so long that the editors over at Giant Bomb didn't have any time to play it, to review it. So instead, what they did is they started what they called a Persona 4 endurance run. And every day they would record about 30 minutes to an hour of gameplay, and then they would post that up on the site each weekday, and you could listen to them comment on the game as they were playing it, and you could watch the game play out too. So this happened from about February of 2009 through September of 2009, and they clocked in at over 100 hours of gameplay. But wow. I watched every episode. So I watched the entire game essentially play out as Vinny and Jeff from Giant Bomb played it and commented on it. So I really got a sense of the characters and really got invested in the characters. And every morning I'd wake up just wanting to know what would happen in the story next. You know, and it was different because with a television show, you know, you get one episode weekly, like on a Saturday or Wednesday or night. But this happened every weekday for, you know, 7 months. But the fact that I never played the game and I was so affected by it emotionally, and the fact that it was so good that I could watch the game and still think that it was one of the best games of 2008 really spoke to me that there was something special about Persona 4. So
it came out in 2008?
It came out in 2008, late 2008. It was, let me see, December 9th, 2008. And Giant Bomb started their endurance run in February of 2009, 3 months after the game came out.
So in order to play this now, though, you'd need a
PlayStation
compatible 2. PS3.
You need a PlayStation 2 or a original PS3 that still has the emotion chip in it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hmm.
It's a long game. If you go to play this, it will take you, I think, some people have recorded or reported finishing it in 66 hours, but it took the Giant Bomb guys 100 hours.
That's pretty amazing, Brent.
Yeah, good stuff.
And what about Shadow of Colossus?
Yeah, Shadow of the Colossus was... I actually did play this game. I rented it back in 2005. I don't know how to explain the game because...
Oh, no.
it's not like... there is no other game I've ever played that is like Shadow of the Colossus. It's a third-person action game, but it's not like Bayonetta or, you know, Dante's Inferno or Devil May Cry. It's got an open world, and there are no, like, loading areas, really. Mm-hmm. It's just one large open world, and everything that happens in the game happens in the world. So,
but it's not a third-person RPG.
No, there are no RPG elements.
Okay.
There are kind of an RPG element in the fact that there are these, I don't remember, like salamanders that you can kill, and once you kill the salamander, you get extra health. But that's as far as the RPG elements go, just increasing your health and your ability to climb up stuff. So basically, your character is tasked with going around in this forbidden land. That's literally what it's called. It's called the Forbidden Land by this evil force. And you can tell from the beginning of this game that it's evil. But the protagonist has a girlfriend that is either in a coma or literally dead, and he wants to get the girlfriend revived. So he makes a deal with the evil force that if he kills the colossi that roam around the land, there's 16 colossus in the Forbidden Land, that the evil force will resurrect his girlfriend. So you go out, into the open world, and you search out for your first Colossus. So you get on your horse and you start traveling towards the first Colossus. And the it's really hard to explain why this game is good to anybody just by telling them. Like if you just tell them about this game, it's going to sound really unimpressive. But once you start playing the game, the gameplay elements come in the battles with the Colossus themselves. You can't brute force your way through a Colossus battle. It's a puzzle, really. You have to figure out how you can damage the Colossus by either climbing up it and stabbing a weak point, or by like using the environment around the Colossus to like crush it or something. And the Colossi are huge. I've never actually played a game that really gives you a sense of skill as much as Shadow of the Colossus does. Some of these Colossus are huge. Like they literally feel like an entire level of a game themselves as you fight them, like in terms of size. Emotionally, the game is kind of. I wasn't moved emotionally by the game, but I've heard of a lot of people that were. As you kill the Colossus, you get the feeling that you shouldn't be killing these things, because they're not inherently malevolent. As you kill them, this black smoke billows out of the Colossus and kind of consumes the protagonist. And you can see that the protagonist, as he kills each Colossus, becomes like increasingly darker, and like horns start growing out of his head, and like he becomes pale, and like his veins turn dark. And I'm just gonna go with a spoiler here because the game's 5 years old at this point. it turns out that the Colossus were tools that were used to divide and contain the evil force that you have made a deal with. So once you have killed all these Colossus, the evil force recombines, and essentially this shaman comes out of nowhere and like summons a black hole that sucks you and the evil force into it, and you both get destroyed. But your girlfriend gets resurrected. So, I mean, you kind of win.
Kind of win, kind of lose. That is really interesting.
Yeah, I tried.
That's the kind of story that people need to, you know, hopefully that inspired other game makers to take chances like that.
Yeah, I think the main thing with Shadow of the Colossus that the game developers can really take out of is there is very little dialogue in Shadow of the Colossus. I can only remember like maybe 10 lines of recorded dialogue in the game. Fully. Like, the entire story is panned out through your battle and your struggle with the Colossus. Everything about the story is conveyed through those battles, and the fact that your character is becoming darker as he kills these things, and the fact that as you kill them, like, you start to realize that you shouldn't be killing them. And I don't know. It's just good stuff. If more games are able to convey their story without having to use elaborate cutscenes, I'm fine with that. That's the steps that I want to see video games start to take.
More gameplay, less cutscene.
Well, gameplay that conveys a story rather than cutscenes that convey the story. You kind of see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think about, I guess we have kind of strayed away from that for a lot of the modern games, especially with Halo.
Well, there's a little bit in Halo 3. It's kind of hidden, like, adds to the story, I don't know, but like in that very first jungle level, you come across a brute that's, you know, beating the junk out of a marine, and if you shoot him fast enough, then you can save the marine, and if you don't, then I think the marine dies, you know?
Yeah.
They tried to put information about the storyline into the game while you're playing, or at least while you're still controlling the head movements. Yeah, but not to the degree you're talking about of the entire story being told through essentially battles.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
Yep. Okay. Well, about 2 hours passed.
Yep.
So since we've started. So let's go ahead and get on to some submissions that we have.
You mean we have submissions?
Yeah, we actually have submissions.
About the decade.
Well,
the decade of games.
A lot of them have submitted for the last year, but we'll entertain those.
Okay.
As much as possible. But yeah, we have a good number of submissions. I'm counting 11. So, jump to it, I suppose. Let's go ahead and start off with Noob Smasher. He writes, "Hey Potek, it's the one and only Smasher of Noobs. I would like to present to you my top 5 best 2009 games. Number 5, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Well, for this one, the graphics are okay. I love Ninja Pro because I snuck up on a bunch of noobs, scoped into their snipers almost the whole game. Other than that, it was an okay game. Number 4, Uncharted 2. Playing this game was like watching a movie. It had the best third-person graphics since Gears of War 2. This game has a very good short storyline, but I hated the guys with the shields. Other than that, it was a very fun game. Now, I'm not a big third-person shooter, so that's why it's number 4. Number 3, Halo 3 Multiplayer. Now, I know what you're thinking. Halo 3 is not 09. Well, you're right. When I meant Halo 3 Multiplayer, I meant the disc that came with ODST. Sorry for not sending something with the Heretic show. I have lots of school to attend. Anyway, the three maps really are really cool. On Longshore, if you go to the pics of the whale, not on the one with the tower with the MG turret, its eyes will follow you." I didn't know that. Yes, creepy. "Heretic is okay, reminds me of Halo 2, and the other one I can't say is okay." I don't know, I like Citadel.
Yeah.
It's a nice small map. Number 2, Need for Speed Shift. It was a very fun game. Achievements are easy. A few of them you get so many G's for. It was very addicting. Not much to say, but I love it, and it has very good graphics. And number 1, Halo 3 ODST. ODST had wonderful graphics. Visor mode made it all the better. The atmosphere, OMG. And the music added to it makes the game my number 1 game of 2009, and can't get enough of Firefight. Can't wait for Reach. That's another thing that I haven't really thought about, how gaming music has evolved over the past decade. We're kind of shifting into this more orchestrative music feel, at least for some of these first-person war kind of shooter games.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess before the Dreamcast, it would have all been, you know, 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit computer music, right? And then once you got discs that you could stick in a drive, then you got more and more real music, which could be orchestral. It could be, rock.
I feel like you're seeing a more lean towards orchestral music, at least for the first-person shooter genre.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other ones.
As opposed to kind of those like rock anthems
going
on during like Gears of War. And did Gears of War have I think that's a bad example because they might have had orchestral music in Gears of War.
I don't remember.
But I know what you're talking about. I know like the kind of the more, you know, guitar oriented music that used to be found in first person shooters, as opposed to that, you know, smooth orchestral music you get from Marty O'Donnell and Halo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That
and
Gregorian
he mixes
chanting.
In some guitars every once in a while, but
yeah,
but yeah. It's
but those aren't the centerpiece of it,
right?
That might just be skewed from me liking Halo a lot, but I mean the guy was chosen for best audio director of 09 for gaming music, so you really can't really go wrong there.
The ODST soundtrack is awesome. I have it in my car.
Yeah.
That's the only CD I play in my car is the ODST soundtrack.
Marty is a master of his craft. This is true.
There's one song that I like of his. I forget what it's called. It's with the piano.
The Halo theme?
No. Shut up, Chucky.
You mean from ODST?
No, from Halo 3.
I think I know what you're talking about. From the Halo 3, the original trailer that came out where Master Chief is looking over the crash orbital elevator.
It's one of the last ones in the Halo.
He looks out over the arc, and you hear that ding, ding, ding.
See, that was the question that I emailed in for the 1 versus 100 thing. Marty asked, what key was the original Halo 3 thing in? And I watched that Vidoc about...
I did, too.
You know, I knew right away it was Edorian, but I guess I didn't send it in fast enough or something.
Probably
not. I don't even know what Dorian means, but I knew it was Edorian.
Yeah.
Music. Hmm. Well, I'll take Tyler the T3 if that's all right.
All right.
Yep.
Hello, fellow members of Podtacular. My favorite games of 2009 were 4, Modern Warfare 2. 3, Halo Wars. Interesting. 2, Halo 3 ODST. And number 1, Assassin's Creed 2. Assassin's Creed 2 beat Halo 3 ODST just because of lasting appeal and amazing story. Although I still loved ODST's story. ODST's soundtrack is awesome as well. Shout outs to Duststorm G. Lewis and Chucky J. Keep on trucking frags. Shout for Brent for some reason.
Nope, I'm non-existent.
But Brent, you gotta shout out Brent because he has the voice.
I'm the voice of the people.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would have to agree.
You and JVB have the voice. It's just the way it is.
No, JVB has the real voice. I have the wannabe voice. I miss JVB. I wish you were back on the show now. But alas, he's doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Spartan QXZ93. Hey, it's Spartan QXZ93 here with my top 4 video games of 2009. Number 4, Halo Wars. I believe that Halo Wars came as close to being a perfect RTS as any game has come on the Xbox 360. However, I found the controls to be a bit awkward to use at first. After I became used to the control setup, I began to enjoy the game. Number 3, Left 4 Dead 2. Although I didn't actually buy Left 4 Dead 2, one of my friends did, and he invited me over to play it, and soon after my first online match, I found myself constantly going over to his house to play Left 4 Dead 2 on Xbox Live.
Nice.
Number 2, Halo 3 ODST. The multiple storylines within the game added to the fact that Firefight is a cooperative game mode made ODST one of my favorite games of 2009. And number 1, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. The interesting storyline combined with the tried and true multiplayer system pushed COD Modern Warfare 2 to the numero uno position in my top 4 list of 2009.
Interesting.
Numero uno.
Numero uno. Okay. Jonah Pandalord writes in, hey Patek, Jonah Pandalord, again, I just wanted to give my choice for the best game of 2009. Well, here it goes. First of all, my favorite intro for any game in 2009 was Borderlands. But my overall favorite game was Assassin's Creed 2. I didn't play the first Assassin's Creed, but this is one of my favorite games of all time. Well, that's about it. Just wanted to give a shout-out to IJLK147 and everyone at Podtacular. Also hope to see what Microsoft is going to do with Project Natal, or Natal, and Halo Reach in 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And Stalmy Please says, hey guys, it's the totally podtastic watch stealer, Stalmy Please. 2009 was a great year for gaming. We saw innovation as well as polished sequels, new studios rise up from the ashes, and studios shot in the face. You might be referring to Ensemble there, I think.
Maybe.
or Grin, even. They're gone, too.
Or Grin. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. Here are my top 5 games of 2009. Number 5, Killzone 2. Although I did not get this game until Christmas, along with my PS3, I had played it multiple times before. The single player isn't anything special, but does a hell of a job for what it is. The multiplayer is great. It brings creative game modes and beautiful visuals to a well-balanced class-based multiplayer. Heavy controls and lack of any deep story held it back from being higher up on my list, but it deserves to be here. Number 4, Halo 3 ODST. Yes, of course, it is on my list. Bungie's expansion to Halo 3 was a great game. It may have even surpassed Halo 3 in some areas. The mission structure was well thought out, with a perfect balance of stealth, vehicle, sniper, and super awesome SMG gameplay. Add in an addicting co-op experience with Firefight and 3 new Halo 3 maps, and it equals number 4 on my list. Number 3. Na 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 Batman. As you can tell by the name, Batman Arkham Asylum has made the top 3. As a Batman fan, I probably experienced 20 to 50 Batgasms during the course of this game. Batman had such a great combat system, along with subtle stealth elements. They also made me tingle by sticking with the Batman lore. They didn't bend the universe so much to ruin the entire Batman experience. Instead, they bent it to create a different but nearly perfect superhero tale.
Interesting.
Yeah, people have said great things. I need to get it still. Number 2, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. What a fun game. If I had to compare it to a movie, I would choose G.I. Joe. Why? Simple. A fast-paced action experience that gives you a sort of action high as you play. Set piece after set piece after set piece. That is Modern Warfare 2 single player in a nutshell, and I totally agree with him.
Okay.
I couldn't have named a better single player experience while I was playing it. But also, like G.I. Joe, it truly had no story. or you're not really sure what the story is trying to tell you. But yeah, it is still addicting enough to be considered good. The multiplayer is great. I have already put a good 3.5 days into the multiplayer. Wow. I'm not sure what it is, but it is just plain fun. Also, I have never felt as excited as I did when I called in my first nuke. Ever. This game falls from the heavens into number 2. I think this guy's read some top 10 lists before. Number 1, Borderlands. Interesting. What else could you ask for? Action? Check. RPG? Check. Guns? Hell yeah. This game surprised me so much. I didn't even have it on my radar until a day or two before release. Wow. I don't know if I have ever had this much fun in a game in the past few years. The co-op is flawless. The loot is endless. The humor is hilarious. It is just one of those games that everyone needs to try. If it's not for you, play it again until it is. okay. Borderlands shotgun rockets its way into numero uno. That's it. There's my list. There now for a more serious keep on fragging. Huh.
Why would you want to frag the Red Cross?
I guess fragging is a good thing in this case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Apparently, keep on fragging the Red Cross, Verizon Wireless, and Bungie for doing their part in the Haiti crisis. I encourage each and every one of you to do your part and donate to help rebuild that fallen country. Stall me out.
Nice. Very nice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Borderlands is a little surprise. Actually, Gearbox helped on it, who actually helped make Halo, so that's one of the reasons I bought it, was Gearbox.
I live like 5 miles away from Gearbox Studios. I should just like walk over there and be like, "Hey, Randy Pitchford, what you working on now?"
I'm working on more of that DLC. Borderlands DLC.
You know what looks like it's going to be cool? It's going to come out as Brink,
yes. That's the one from Bethesda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the character models. I don't like the faces. They look like horse faces.
Yeah. I hope they have different kinds of faces.
Yeah, those.
It reminds me, I picked up for $10 on Amazon, I picked up Sega Virtua Tennis. Mm-hmm. And all, unless you're except for the pro players, all the amateur players have exactly the same face, just with different skin colors and facial hair. It's really sad. And so that kind of reminded me. So I really hope there's different face models that you can pick.
Yeah, other than horse face.
Horse face. Ah.
Yeah.
Big Gooba Fish has written in. He says, "Hi, it's the Big Gooba Fish again, and I'm submitting for the live show of Podtacular. It might be late, life, but if you're it may be late, but if you're reading this, then never mind. I started gaming way back when I was about 4. My neighbors had a Nintendo 64, and I used to go over there and play games like Super Mario 64, Star Wars Pod Racer, Banjo-Kazooie, and many more. I was hooked. The first console that I actually owned, was the original Xbox. I got it on Christmas with Halo 1 and Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy. Mm. I've been a Halo fan and a gamer ever since. Keep on fragging grunts that scream ba-bam constantly while waiting for Halo.
Ba-bam! Reach.
The Gooba signing out."
Cool.
Okay.
Death to the Skies writes in, "Hey everyone, it's Death to the Skies with my first truly memorable experiences of gaming. But there are so many that I'm just going to put them in the list. Number 1, Half-Life 2, possibly the most exciting game I've played. Number 2, BioShock, best twist in the game ever."
Mm-hmm.
Haven't played it, so I wouldn't know.
Would you kindly play BioShock, Dusty?
Yeah.
If I got a copy of it.
Everybody, yeah. Go ahead, keep reading.
Number 3, Halo 3, best legendary ending ever. Number 4, Unreal 2, the most original Unreal game and most memorable game to me. Number 5, Fear, for not being as scary as some people made it out to be. Oh, I hated that game. I played it. Gosh, I was scared. I was shaking by the end of it.
Wow.
It was that bad. Or that good, I guess, depending on how you look at it. So yeah, that's my greatest game experiences in about 1 minute. Peace out to Dusty and the rest of the gang. Don't worry, I'll learn your names eventually. Well, this one over here is Brent, and this one over here is Chucky. And the one that's not here tonight is Greg.
To my left is Duststorm. I get Stall Me Please again, apparently.
I must have submitted in twice.
He realized that we were talking about the decade, so...
Yeah.
Yes.
Instead of just 2009, so...
Yes. Dun, 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 dun. So apparently we get 2 different views from him.
Yay!
Well, what a decade. My gaming skills began on 5/25/2000 when I was born in the state of Missouri. No, wait, that's not what it says. It says my brother got an N64 and GoldenEye for his birthday. I played that so much. I remember spending all Saturday morning playing Cruisin' World and Super Smash Brothers. Then in 2003, my brother got a PS2 and I got a GameCube. I spent most of the time on his PS2. All I ever played was GTA Vice City. Man, what a game. My GameCube was virtually untouched until I got Resident Evil 4 for it. I then got my 360 on October 1st, 2007. I think I got mine right around the same time, with Halo 3. I remember that date because that was the day the state of Tennessee activated the no smoking in restaurants law, and we ate in the old smoking section of Cracker Barrel. Okay. Interesting. Anyway, I then got involved with communities, bought an HDTV, some games, and a PS3, and 4,008 hours of gaming, and $2,000 later, here I am. My game of the last decade was definitely GTA Vice City. That's my decade in an almond shell. Keep on fragging G. Lewis for never calling me back after our date as punishment. Your watch is mine. There's a story there that...
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Anything.
Untold very stories.
Interesting.
I think about that one when he decides to show up.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he was missing.
That's why he's gone.
Making up for that date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was Valentine's Day yesterday.
Yeah, that's true. He made a trip, special trip to Tennessee.
Right. Yep. He can't smoke there in restaurants, but he can go on a date with Stalmy, please.
Oh,
all right. This one comes from Chickenfoot. Hey, PodTech. This has been a great decade for games due to the amount of online gaming. I think I started gaming in 2000 with a PS1, Crash Team Racing, and Spyro the Dragon. Then I saw the light, 360. So I'm here to tell you about my top five. Number five, Spyro 2. Number four, Fable 2. Number three, Call of Duty 4. Number two, Fallout 3. And number one, Halo 3. Hey, did you notice that all of those are sequels?
That's dun, the best dun, dun.
Actually, the winner, Spyro, a little bit.
The original Spyro?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Chickenfoot goes on to say the winner is Halo 3 because I have spent so much time playing it and it has a great community. Keep on fragging the VGAs.
Farmer Elmo writes in, it was the night before my cousin's birthday and myself and my mach bro were staying at their house in London, England. We were both tired from the travel, for we live and still live in Helensburgh, Scotland. Oh, he's Scottish. What?
Well, that's good. I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh. I was thinking with your dipstick. As it was near towards midnight, my cousin wakes me up and says, you want to see something cool? Without needing a reply, he took me to his den, and what was there bestowed before my eyes, you ask? No, it wasn't a PS2, but an Xbox 360. Big smiley face. And right next to the 360 was Halo 3. Two of the most bestest things, I guess this would be in the world, were shown to me that night. We sat up playing all night until it was probs rank 30 in Team Slayer.
In one night?
Dang.
I guess that's possible. Wow. But
unfortunately, this was on a guest account, so I lost all of it, and also the game. we probably have some people screaming at us right now. And that was how I started gaming. XD.
Very nice. Thank you, Farmer Elmo. The we have our good friend Arby, otherwise known as Arbitation. Not arbitration, but Arbitation.
Yeah.
Well, when it comes to the subject of playing games, I think that all you have to do is ask my teachers how much or how little homework I usually get done. Oh, Arby. Come on, Arby. The answer speaks for itself. I play too many video games. I wasn't really all that into gaming until I bought an Xbox 360 on release. It was as if an angel had fallen from the sky and landed in our cabinet. I might mention now that I managed to walk past my Xbox three times, that mom and dad had put it on my bed while I was at school before I realized it was there. Oh. Then, of course, when I saw it, I giggled like a schoolgirl and was like, rawr, I has Xbox, oh, la, 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 la. Before my Xbox, I enjoyed mostly Mario games, Mario Sunshine, Mario 64, but I was still a little kid, so I couldn't quite understand it to the depth that I do these days. In 2007, when Halo 3 came out, it was the shiznit. Midnight release being axed at my local game traders by all the Halo 2 noobs and eating way too much free food, all made for a very exciting night. But then we had to sleep. The next thing I wanted to do, I had to wait a whole 6 hours to be with my true love. Aww. I persevered through the rest of the morning and awoke to a marathon day of just Halo 3. I had never owned an Xbox and consequently had never owned, although I had played Halo 2 or Halo 1, so I didn't have much to compare it to. I finally got Xbox Live in November 2007 and have been playing lots of Halo 3 ever since. Some of my best Halo moments have been with Podtacular trying to sell quality Podtacular yarn to a bunch of hardcore MLG players, trolling big team battle lists, and plenty of WTF BBQ moments, and even some fail moments. Private Church's warthog driving, yes, comes to mind right now. Just the tip of the iceberg there, but I've had countless awesome times with PodTech peeps. Team SWAT, I'm looking at you, Snowman Hunter, and I can't wait to have even more with Reach. I also love playing Halo with my dad because it's a ton of fun and I get to see him get pwned. Keep on fragging trucks, RB.
Aww. That that's funny.
I have to agree with pretty much everything he said.
Mm-hmm.
My story's a little different, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got my Xbox January of 08 with birthday money.
Sweet.
Yeah. So thanks everyone to listening in to a very special episode of Podtacular. Thanks to JVB and Ace of Space Cards who were on earlier, but they had to leave for family reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks again to them for taking time to come talk to us about their experiences. And hopefully you guys will listen to the show a little bit. See what else we had to say when you weren't here. When the mayhem got unleashed. I did want to get into anticipations for this year, but we've already did 2 hours, so we'll save that for another podcast.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We'll save that for another time. And go ahead and wrap things up. Send in your comments, questions, and submissions to submissions@podtacular.com. That's a new email, by the way. So don't use podtacular@gmail.com anymore. We will still take submissions to them for the next couple weeks. And then at the end of February, we'll cut that off and all the submissions will be taken only from submissions@podtacular.com. So keep that in mind. Our show is community-centered based on your submissions, so be sure to submit. And watch podtacular.com for an invitation to submit your stuff for next week's show, which is already out on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck. Brent. Someone.
Someone. Okay. Be sure to check out our website, podtacular.com, and while you're there, come drop us a line in the forums and get involved with the community.
Thanks to everyone that contributes to Podtacular by dedicating time to lead events, helping out with the bills by donating through PayPal, following us on Twitter and Facebook, or subscribing to the show on iTunes and Zune Marketplace.
Check out the other shows on the GamerCast Network, Gamertag Radio, Uncle Gamer, Sarcastic Gamer, the GCN Video Game Show, Post Game Report, hosted by JVB, and Destructoid. And that pretty much wraps it up. Next show we'll be doing is we're going to talk about the Halo Reach ViDoc. This will probably be out by the time we're recording or right before we're recording. We'll try to get a recording session in sometime between Wednesday and Friday on this. So if this comes out before then, make sure you submit. And the one after that will be another special episode of Podtacular where we'll be doing a Call of Duty and Halo roundtable. So make sure you submit for that too. And both of those shows should be live after I get the technical difficulties worked out that we had in this one. So again, thank you for listening. And until next time, I am Duststorm.
I'm Brent Gamer.
I'm Chucky J.
And we'll see you in a few days.
Keep on fragging trucks.
Yes.
Bye, everybody. Trucks. Keep on summoning demons by putting magical guns to your head and pulling the trigger. Don't do that. Don't put any gun up to your head and pull the trigger. That's stupid.
Oh.
But you can't put magical sunglasses on.
And jump into TVs.
Yes.
I would suggest doing that.
Sounds like fun.
I'm gonna do that right now.
Oh, jeez. I hear this big piece of glass just shatter.
Brett, no! No! No!
It'd be even funnier if I actually made it through.
This week on the GamerCast Network. Sure, Podtacular may be a little late in this, but they have their stories too. Podtacular is taking a look at the past decade in gaming and talking about their favorite and worst moments. They may even dive into the new Halo vid doc too. On episode 86 of the Sarcastic Gamer Blue Show, the crew discusses why MAG is so frustrating, how the PSN will be like HBO in the future, and getting SD Netflix on your Wii is like dating only fat chicks. On episode 56 of Sarcastic Gamer Pink, the ladies discuss Animal Crossing, record tripping, and Frawls being a lame-o big fat liar. Discover the community that brings you all these great podcasts and more at GamerCastNetwork.com.
Yay!
Hey!
Yay!
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, everybody. Let's get freaky.
Yes. That was a while ago.
Yeah, yeah. Long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was a young... young
back
lad.
Back when I was a young boy, we didn't have these fancy games called Halo.
I we still got think of them, though, and after every intro.
I had to play games with one control stick.
And a red button.
And one red button only.
Oh.
No force feedback.
No vibrating or rumble pack controllers.
Yeah. E.T. dropped all the way to the bottom of a pit and my controller didn't shake once. that game was nice. So horrible.
Rumble? What's this rumble you speak of?
I was a little kid and I still knew it was a horrible game.
yeah. That I remember Pitfall being like one of the better games of Atari. Mm-hmm. But E.T. was like, wow. Tron was pretty bad too.
Yeah. Suckers Tron don't know about my pit swinging skills. You know what I'd like to see is I want to see wood paneling be reintroduced onto consoles. Like
the there old you go.
Yeah. Yes.
Like a cheap motel room.
Yeah.
There's still a few hotels that have like the N64 built into the TV. Like
I know.
Yeah, like hooked up to their old RCA. Yeah.
Their old
Xbox 720. Xbox 720 now with wood paneling. Oh man, I'd buy that in an instant.
You just this big wooden plat. It looks like a 2x4 or something, and it has like an Xbox inside.
The only problem is there's no more Red Ring of Death. It's just straight up thing catches on fire.
Yeah.
It's not a red. It's a red ring of fire.
Ah, ring of fire.
Brings new utility to the Xbox Live indie game fireplace.
Oh, gee.
Firefight.
Prevent.
I can't believe that.
Fire.
Yeah, I'm fire.
Yeah, I guess wood paneling would definitely change the concept of firefight on ODST.
Yeah, you're right.
You guys aren't making fun of me because I bought the fireplace and the massager from the indie game store, are you?
Oh. No, man.
No, but I do have a trial for the massager, which
that massager is a good investment.
That's all you need, though, is the trial. What else does it do?
How long does it go for?
Who cares? You can just keep pressing go.
Exactly. Until you're done.
That's right.
So the question is, how long can you go?
I'm just saying, like,
oh my god.
That's like saying...
Somehow I knew that was going to go there.
That's aww. Like saying, you know, oh, you only use it, the massager in Brookstone? Yeah, because that's all I need it for. That yeah. one time.
Oh, I don't think it means to have to go there, but nonetheless.
I never had the luxury of trying that.
Heaven's good.
Yeah.
At our mall now, they have these like chairs just positioned everywhere, and you can pay like a dollar to get a 3-minute massage.
Yeah, at the mall. Yeah, with these weird-looking chairs and the thing you sit on your chest. Well, you don't sit on your chest. You lay on your chest.
No, these are just like straight-up chairs. Like, they're basically just massage chairs that you would find in Brookstone, just all over the mall.
Oh, okay.
Like okay.
Recliners.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a corner-operated kind of deal.
And the pads are built in or something?
Yeah.
They literally mess you up. Like, one of the massage thingies was broken or something, and it stuck out too much. And it freaking almost... I thought it was going to, like, break my spine in half. Yeah, so I was like, holy crap.
Okay. This massage chair is known to cause herniated discs.
Jeez, I hope not.
Hemorrhoids. Now with massage chairs.
For not an easy
sense
of.
Ah.
You too could have hemorrhoids.
You too can have hemorrhoids like the stars.
I'm Billy Mays.
I didn't want to go there either. I was like, all right, let me not do
it. It was going there anyway.
It's too early, man.
Too early?
Too early.
Not early enough.
So too late.
Way too late.
Okay.
Yeah, we could get the ShamWow guy to do it.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
But he's
you're gonna love my hemorrhoids.
Oh, yeah, isn't he missing a piece of his tongue or something?
Oh yeah, the prostitute bit part of his tongue off.
Okay, I got my hemis.
I guess he lost it with the slap chop.
I heard that.
We're making practice again, one slap at a time.
I heard that commercial in Spanish. I even put the link up in Twitter. Mm-hmm. And in Spanish, he goes, "Mira mi huevos."
Look
at the tuna. He takes
look at my eggs.
Yeah, "Mira mi huevos." And I lost it, dude. I was like, oh man.
Oh man.
Ow.
Oh jeez.
Oh wow.
Like for when they do commercials in other languages, do they actually does the person actually go through and say it in that language, or does it just a voiceover dub?
No, it was him.
Oh,
he was saying it. Yeah. He was like, he did pretty good. He sounded like Frank Perdue when Frank Perdue did his commercials in Spanish. Mis pollos que son muy bueno.
Wow.
Yeah, those were classic too, so.
Oh,
mis pollos son muchos frescos. Yeah.
Who is that guy with the cool braided beard? In the Vidoc.
Oh, I was wondering too.
He's been there a while. I remember seeing him in other Vidocs, but I don't remember his name.
I like that dude's beard.
I know.
It's cool.
Like interwoven.
Yeah, he probably
it reminds
has
me of like a.
He probably has food there from like last year.
Oh yeah,
somewhere deep in there.
Reserves.
Oh man, it's a ham. Nice.
Like a whole Thanksgiving meal just stabbed away.
Yeah.
It keeps it nice and fresh.
I'm assuming you don't have.
I just wonder where those sweet potatoes went.
Oh man, I smacked Luke Smith because I thought he took my M&Ms and they're right here. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes in. Have you seen my Skittles?
They were right here, damn it. No, they weren't, dude. You ate them. Chokes him out with his beard.
Ha 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 ha.